Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, you should know that yesterday, Ian Tuttle suggested he might start asking for a portion of your check, since this is the second or third time he's had to analyze really good nights for Donald Trump on the Three Martini Lunch. So just be prepared to be invoiced, I guess.
I was going to say, it's the teeming millions we make from the Three Martini Lunch royalties, right?
Yes.
That's all that he wants, his piece of that? Okay, got it.
Anyway, on to the good martini for today. And yesterday morning, Wednesday morning, Ted Cruz promised a major announcement at 4 p.m., and it was the worst kept secret in politics this year, probably, because by noon, pretty much everyone knew what was going to happen. Ted Cruz took the stage in Indianapolis, Indiana, and while trailing Donald Trump quite badly in delegates, announced that he had made his choice for his running mate should he actually end up as the nominee.
After a great deal of consideration and prayer, I have come to the conclusion that if I am nominated to be president of the United States, that I will run on a ticket with my vice presidential nominee, Carly Fiorina.
So the crowd loves that. Fiorina came in all fired up and ready to take on Trump and Hillary.
Ted Cruz could not be more right in what he said. There is a lot at stake. And in fact, this is a fight for the soul of our party and the future of our nation. Now, there are some who would say, a lot of people in the media would say, well, why have the fight? Just lay down. Let's let it be over here. You know what? I've had tough fights all my life. Tough fights don't worry me a bit. What matters is the fight worth having? And this is a fight worth having. This is a fight worth winning. And with your help, we will win this fight.
The reaction to this depends on what you think of the race. If Ted Cruz needed a shakeup and a change in momentum, which he certainly did, he's got to win Indiana by most estimations. Helps to perhaps attract some women to his side. If he lasts long enough to make it to California, that could be of help. And it gives people a look at the full ticket. Other people say it just smacks of desperation, given how many delegates Trump has racked up in the past couple of weeks. What do you make?
The most probably overused headline this morning is Hail Carly.
Yes.
In the form of, you know, referring to this as a Hail Mary pass. The thing is, Greg, like, one, sometimes Hail Mary passes work.
Right.
Ask Doug Flutie. And then two, like, when you're down a lot and the time is clicking down and you don't have a lot of other great options, then the Hail Mary pass is the rational choice. If you're Ted Cruz, you know, doing what you've been doing, you know, for the rest of the campaign, might work, probably isn't. It kind of came up pretty flat in the last couple of states. I mean, it's not, you know, it was not, even if you didn't expect him to win any of the five states voting this week, you know, no counties, really? No delegates, really? Third place behind Kasich in a couple of them? You know, this is not where you want to be. So after, you know, Trump has a day, which probably a lot of people say, okay, this thing's over, time to wrap it up. It's all over but the shouting. Here he does, and he puts this this dramatic new move. And oh, by the way, there's a lot to like about Carly Fiorina. He's played it in that soundbite. She gave a really good, like, everything we liked about her during her bid earlier this year comes back as an advocate for Cruz. She's been on the trail so far. She's polished. She's smart. And let's face it, it helps to have a woman. This is a demographic that Donald Trump is running very badly. And even though I keep running into people who seem to want to ignore this, more women vote in a presidential election than men. So this is not a demographic you can ignore. So is this going to guarantee Cruz victory? No, there's nothing that can guarantee Cruz victory here. But he could probably do better in Indiana. It might help in California. And I think it puts a very sharp choice before the delegates in Cleveland. Do you want to go with Trump? You know, we see the general election polls. We see the fact that Utah looks like it's a close race if Trump's the nominee. Mississippi, Texas, Arizona in play, because there are so many Republicans who are repulsed by what they see in Donald Trump and a lot of Republican women. Or do you go with Cruz Fiorina, which has a shot of beating Hillary Clinton? I think it's, you know, to me, it's a no-brainer, but I'm sure that the Trump folks will disagree. If you're Ted Cruz, even if you're losing that delegate race, you don't make it easy for those delegates. And I think this was a very, you know, do you know what the quote that kept running through my head yesterday, Greg?
What's that?
It's a line from Dodgeball. That's a bold move, Cooper. Let's see if that works out for him.
Let's move on to the bad martini now. And this is a story that has popped up at various times. We have discussed it at least once before, but given yesterday's events, it needs to be discussed again. This is the USA Today version of the story. Former House Speaker Dennis Hastert, who less than a decade ago stood second in line to the presidency, was sentenced to 15 months in federal prison Wednesday for a bank fraud case linked to allegations he sexually abused teenage boys more than 30 years ago. Federal Judge Thomas Durkin called Hastert, 74, a, quote, serial child molester, unquote, and rejected a prosecutor's recommendation of 6 months in prison on a banking charge that carries a maximum five-year sentence. The court also fined Hastert $250,000 and sentenced him to 2 years of supervised release after leaving prison. Hastert must also register as a sex offender. Jim, this story is so horrific on so many levels, and credit to the guy who now holds Hastert's old seat, Randy Holdgren, putting out a statement yesterday, very much condemning Hastert in every single way and sympathizing with all the victims in this case. No sympathy for Hastert whatsoever. The amazing thing is that Hastert rose to the speakership at a time when they absolutely needed somebody who was morally pure because of what had happened with Newt Gingrich and Bob Livingston, and the Clinton-Lewinsky scandal was coming to a head with impeachment at that time. And then his time exiting as speaker was, of course, him handling the Mark Foley male page abuse scandal. So at no time did any conscience seem to kick in with this guy.
Yeah. Somebody said it's the type of year where House Speaker admits abuse isn't even like the top story of the day yesterday. Like, it's kind of bizarre. And I don't want this to – I understand it's a grim, repulsive story, and I understand why people might want to avert their eyes. But there's a part of me that's to say, look, you know, I cover Congress during the Hastert years. This is a guy who largely got away with it. And yes, you know, later – some point in life, one of the victims kind of made an attempt to kind of extort money out of him, blackmail him. It was only because he ran afoul of the financial disclosure laws that this all came to light. And a couple of people have said, look, whatever you think of Hastert's crimes, the statute of limitations has expired on them, and it's a ridiculous sentence for the actual crime that he was convicted of. Greg, I don't know about you. Call me a barbarian who is a fair-weather friend of the rule of law, but I kind of don't mind the fact that he got the maximum sentence for this, and this turned to be a kind of a de facto sentence for his actual acts against those boys decades ago. Apparently, the judge said he didn't want this to be life in prison. Obviously, Hastert is getting up there in years. And I remember sitting there thinking, Greg, why? Why would that be so terrible? What has Hastert done to not deserve life in prison in light of these allegations of abuse? And oh, by the way, Tom DeLay and all the other guys who wrote those supportive letters, I hope they're looking at the mirror this morning and they're feeling horrified. Every stereotype of corrupt Republicans denouncing others and averting themselves, not paying attention to their own things, involved in horrible scandals themselves, pretty much is embodied by this. And it kind of makes the entire that era of the Hastert years, they just feel tainted and disturbing. Because think about it, the entire team, the Republican nickname for him was Coach. This was a guy who the wrestling coach days were part of the Hastert persona of it. And it just really just leaves this awful distaste to the entire career of him in public life. So good riddance, Dennis Hastert. They said, oh, they've already taken down his portrait in the hall. And I'm sitting there thinking, take it down? You know, Greg, they should be burning that portrait.
Absolutely being burned. And I'm no legal expert, but why not examine whether or not there should be changes in the statute of limitations on crimes like that?
Yeah, Greg, I can't help, you know, what was the philosophy there where they said, yes, he abused all those children, but it was 30 years ago. Let's let bygones be bygones. You know, I think that's a sufficiently horrible enough crime that the state, if they find evidence, should come after you, no matter how long ago it was. It seemed like a very bizarre situation where we'd have to rely on a financial disclosure law or you know, potential money laundering laws to go after someone for a real crime. That I think most people would say, look, you know, time doesn't necessarily heal that wound.
No, not at all. Not when you listen to the victims or their family members. The pain, there's no statute of limitation on the impact of that crime for sure. So on to the crazy martini now. And a couple different ways that this is being reported. This is the AP story. Senator Ted Cruz's former campaign co-chairman in Virginia has traveled to Syria and promised support for the government of President Bashar Assad, who U.S. officials have repeatedly said has lost the legitimacy to rule the war-torn country. Virginia State Senator Dick Black's trip to a Middle Eastern country in the midst of a civil war and his comments in the face of official U.S. foreign policy are highly unusual for a state lawmaker. The funny part, in addition to the not-so-funny part, which obviously that was, Jim, is that certain media outlets are reporting that Dick Black is a U.S. senator. He's not. He's a state senator from the Loudoun County part of Virginia. But a lot of folks are referring to him in print and in broadcast stories as a Republican U.S. senator. Just a tiny bit of research would perhaps clear that up for them. But I think we found out why they were referring to him that way. That's because the official Syrian government release says U.S. Senator to President al-Assad. War on Syria was an unlawful war of aggression. It reads President Bashar al-Assad on Tuesday received a letter from U.S. Senator from the state of Virginia, Richard Black, a letter in which he said, I was pleased by the Russians' intervention against the armies invading Syria. With their support, the Syrian army has made dramatic strides against the terrorists, so on and so forth. So, Jim, pretty shoddy work in checking a story by the media, and why anybody, especially a guy who's loyal to Ted Cruz, is doing favors for Bashar Assad. A little bit of a mystery there.
You know, Greg, the first thought is, if you cover U.S. politics, or international affairs, for that matter, and you... You probably should know who the two senators from Virginia are. Tim Kaine, Mark Warner, not exactly obscure guys, maybe not the most common names in the world. But again, if you cover politics, you probably – both of them were heads of the Democratic National Committee a while back. You probably would have thought you would have encountered these names at some point. And if either one of them had been beaten by Republican Dick Black, you probably – that would have been news, right? Maybe they're thinking of Ed Gillespie or something like that. Okay, fine. But you should go and double check that. I think it seems – not unreasonable to me that the Syrian government may not be up to speed on every little detail of U.S. foreign policy. And oh, by the way, a U.S. Republican senator going to Syria and saying, hey, attaboy, Assad, love what you're doing out here. That this is just kind of this bizarre and creepiness. According to the news agency of Syria, which admittedly got his title wrong, which is potentially incorrect, but he said, you know, I will be Syria's voice. Greg, did he get elected from Syria? Is somebody like paying him to be Syria's voice? Why would you say, I'm a Virginia state lawmaker representing Loudoun County. I will be Syria's voice. Syria's got a voice. I mean, to the extent it's not being muffled out by Assad and maniacs and ISIS. Why is this state lawmaker going out to Syria? Like, is there nothing going on? Look, Greg, you and I live here. We have our own problems. I mean, the McAuliffe just decided to say every ex-con, no matter how violent the crime, can vote. I think that seems like a little bigger issue closer to home. Look, ISIS is terrible. Assad is terrible. Why is this guy jumping over there? Usually when a state lawmaker or somebody goes overseas, usually it's like, well, I'm bringing back investment and business opportunities and trade possibilities to my home district in my home state. Greg, what is Dick Black think, you know, that Syria is going to send to Northern Virginia? Chemicals? I know they got a lot of them out there. You know, oh, man, this guy's sarin, top of the line. And, you know, nobody makes chlorine and things like that, like the Syrians. Let me tell you, it's bizarre. It's disturbing. It's absurd. We'll see how, you know, if there's any explanation when he comes back. But it's the sort of story, Greg, that basically makes the announcement that Bob McDonnell may not have been corrupt enough to warrant his conviction only the second craziest story of the day, which otherwise would have been our crazy martini.
Yeah, it's not been a good week for Virginia. That's putting it mildly. Jim, welcome back to That Nonsense. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.